Everybody knows. They knows. Noses, nasality, and mucus, and phlegm, and boogers, and all these things that, well, we don't necessarily talk about in common conversation. It's not like I put in my sermons at Temple Sons of Bitches, which is where I lecture, and the temple that I founded. I don't start my sermon saying, Oh, you know, I picked a booger out of my nostril yesterday. It looked just like Jonah. And then this makes me think of the whale, because Jonah was in there. No, I don't necessarily have to go that. But let's face it, we all blow our noses. We all get the running noses. We pick our noses. Sometimes we eat the things that come out of our noses. Maybe I shouldn't be mentioning that per se, but what I'm trying to tell you is noses are more important, perhaps, to our overall body health than we think. And me, being Jewish, the nose makes up about 40% of my anatomy. So, and it's very exciting for me to be talking very shortly to an expert in noses and nose washing and cleansing and nasality. Her name is Dr. Hannah R. Solomon. She has created a new kind of neti pot. I should get a throat expert here instead of a nose expert. No, but this kind of neti pot thing where I've done that. Well, you know what? Let's bring on Hannah Solomon and I'll tell her my problems. Because if I have a doctor and she's not charging me, I'm going to tell her any problem that I have, including my wrist and my shoulders hurting a little bit and my hip. And sometimes I still have hernia residual pain. So, Dr. Hannah Solomon, first of all, are you with us? Hello, shalom.
Hello. And thank you for having me. And by the way, your throat issue originates in your nose.
There you go. Look at this.
So your throat issue would be totally relieved if you just washed your nose, believe it or not.
Huh. This is interesting. I realize I know they're connected, but then wouldn't it make sense if there was something wrong with my nose that I should wash my throat?
Yes. Because it is connected and you know what we make? Are you sitting down? We make.
I sit down when I make sometimes. What? No, what are you saying?
We make a quart of mucus per day.
A quart? Oh my God, I'm bigger than a cow. Look at that.
It's huge. And so cleaning it makes sense.
Well, no, absolutely it makes sense. So first of all, I should mention that you are a pediatrician, that you have been. How long have you been a doctor, Dr. Hannah?
25 years. I'm the snot-nose expert.
Dr. Hannah is the snot-nose expert. At what point, and I have to ask this, did you go from just being a doctor to being a doctor with an idea?
Because, you know, I took an oath in medical school. First, do no harm. And I was mature enough to really take that to heart.
Or to nose, actually.
It wasn't about the money. It was about really helping people. And as a pediatrician...
Are you sure you're Jewish?
I'm
sorry. Continue.
It's okay. So as a pediatrician, you become, really, every pediatrician, what's the number one thing you see? Snotty noses. And then they turn into ear infections and coughs and all this stuff. So very quickly in my practice, I started teaching my patients how to neti. And for those listeners, a neti pot looks like an Alan lamp, and it's an ancient technique that Buddhist monks came up with thousands of years ago. When they meditate, before they do so, they would wash their nose to enhance deep breathing.
Huh.
And so I took that system and taught my two-year-old patients how to do it, and I used their feedback and my own experience and looked at the scientific literature and thought, aha, the nose breathes or filters 10,000 liters of air a day. This is the source of a lot of my patients' serous problems.
Right.
And what can I do to help prevent writing prescriptions for antibiotics? Because I did not want to do that.
So
that's how I came up with the snot-nose expert
But what was lacking in the neti pots and the old style Aladdin's lamp and enema things that that people were using before?
That's right.
What was lacking?
What was lacking? Okay, sorry. What was lacking was comfort.
Mm.
It's not so comfortable. Convenience, because Americans like convenience. And with the neti pot, you have to make your own salt mix. If it's too much, it burns. If it's too little, it burns. If it's not enough of certain something, it actually causes swelling. There's lots of problems with it. And a two-year-old has a very difficult time bending, twisting your neck like a pretzel and using a neti pot. So, but the idea of washing the filter makes a lot of sense, right? Just like brushing your teeth.
Or cleaning out a humidifier or an air conditioner in the summer. It sits there all winter. The schmutz goes in, it goes in. And then you have to take the filter out, and it's gross, and the thing, all that accumulated, you didn't even know it, but it was going into there. Am I right?
Every filter needs a good cleaning once in a while. And the nose is the external filter. And I don't know about you, but most Americans live in a polluted environment with car fumes and carbons and pollen and viral particles. So it makes sense. If it's dirty, why don't we wash it instead of drug it or surgerize it? And that is my ultimate goal, to get Americans to use fewer drugs, to educate Americans so that they go under the knife less often.
But
did you know that most sinus surgeries need to be repeated in 5 or 10 years because it doesn't really solve the problem?
Well, wait a minute. Would it also be because maybe it's done on young people and their faces keep growing and changing until they're, 16, 17 years old?
Well, and the other thing, but this is more of an old-fashioned Jewish grandmother perspective, which is God makes us perfectly. And when the surgeon goes in and changes the anatomy and scrapes the lining that protects us, he's redesigning what was made perfectly. The only problem was it kept getting plugged up with gunk, and instead of washing it, they want to surgerize it.
God makes us perfect. I don't know. Have you ever seen Beatrice Arthur? I mean, I'm just kidding there. I'm just joking. We are talking with Dr. Hannah Solomon here. How did you perfect your version of the neti pot? In other words, did you go through a lot of R&D? Did you come up with all these different tubes and mechanisms until you came up with the one that you felt was, most usable and feasible?
Yeah, well, Rabbi, I am the biggest water wimp in the universe. I grew up in Brooklyn in the ghetto, and I never went to a swimming pool, and my mother didn't know how to swim, so we never were allowed to go in the beach, and so I'm not a water person, naturally. And one of the rules that I had in my clinic was never expect my patient to do what I myself cannot do.
Huh.
So I designed a system that instead of flooding your sinuses and making you feel like you just got pushed in the swimming pool, but I'm supposed to do it because it's good for me, I designed a system that actually vacuums your sinuses, that never makes you feel like you're drowning or choking. It's so comfortable that I have tens of thousands of two-year-olds who ask, Mommy, can I use my blue bottle? Because it actually feels good. I don't know if this is going to be gross, but having a bowel movement is not sexy, but we must do it to stay healthy. Well, washing your nose is similar. It's not sexy, but we know, scientifically proven, that if you wash your nose, you use 80% less drugs. We know if you wash your nose, kids do not get ear infections. The list goes on. I don't want to bore you with
that. No,
studies,
it's fine, but I will. I have to tell you this. I have to tell you that Dave Lefkowitz, who is the wonderful, brilliant host of this radio program, had a terrible allergy. I've known him for years. I should really break off with him, but we're too close at this point. We grew apart, but we're still friends. It happens. But Dave Lefkowitz was young and had terrible allergies growing up and was sent to allergists, would not get shots. thank God. But he would be brought into this allergist office and put into this big armchair where they would take these tubes and put water through his head. They would put a tube in the mouth, a tube up the nose. The water would go schlucking and schlucking. It would go up the nose, out the other nose, down the throat, out the tuchus, through the ears. It was amazing there wasn't water shooting out of his eyes. So I don't think it ever did anything for him. Well, maybe got over his fear of swimming. But seriously, how is that sort of different? Or do you think that was a good idea, the way they used to do that? Or maybe they still do.
Well, was it a good idea? The general idea is a good idea, but did it feel good to the patient?
Gewalt, no. It did not, I said. No, it did. Gewalt,
exactly.
It did not.
So it wasn't a good idea, because at the end of the day, it probably relieved some of the debris inside. But at the end of the day, what are you going to do, live in the chair and have them flush twice a day for you? But the general idea of irrigating the wound, I mean, if you think about it, it's like having a muddy cut on your knee. And if you wash the mud off the muddy cut, you probably won't need an antibiotic. It probably won't get infected. Well, your nose was filled with junk, and so your doctor tried to get some of it out. But that's fine for that moment, but it wasn't comfortable, and you couldn't do it on your own.
I will say that Muddy Cut was my favorite blues player when I was in my 20s. Oh, I loved Muddy Cut. I used to see him in the clubs. I'm sorry. You're forcing that laugh, and I appreciate it. But
No.
So, how many years ago did you invent the NasoPure system of nasal cleansing?
Yeah, in 04, I received my patent, but I've been teaching nose washing a long time, and I've been focusing and trying to understand all of the factors that go into a comfortable and effective and convenient nose wash. So, you know, I don't care if
you don't have a life, do you? I'm kidding. You're a doctor. But let me ask also in the R&D of this, if you're thinking of a one-size-fits-all nose wash, are there other, I mean, you were very kind enough to also send me a sample of the NasoPure, which my dear wife Miriam Libby will actually be trying in a couple of minutes. She's coming into the studio with us. But let's say there's a fat person, really fat person, or an anorexic-y person, a male, a woman, will you be branching out and maybe making a NasoPure for over 400 pounds, people with big noses, people with nose jobs, or does one size really fit all?
Well, I've never met a human being who had a nostril that was too small or too big for the NasoPure tip. Because I just never have. But maybe ask me in a couple of years, and I'll see if I happen to meet somebody who has a humongous nostril. But to be honest, Rabbi, I've never met a person that had a nostril that didn't fit NasoPure. But please be sure to understand that this is made for children 2 years and above. Well, I have something else for babies, but this is for... if you're old enough to stand and neurologically intact enough to be able to hold a toothbrush, then you're able to learn how to wash.
Well, that actually leaves out most Polish people, but no, I'm kidding. It's just a joke. I kid. Oh, my God. We're talking with Dr. Hannah Solomon here in the neighborhood of the radio program Dave's Gone By. I would like to introduce someone who is so close to me in the world, someone that I love very, very much and very deeply. She is my dear wife, Miriam Libby, by whom I have 21 and a half beautiful children. Well, they're not all beautiful. You know, there's inbreeding going on, but most of them are beautiful. Miriam Libby has volunteered because she has terrible allergies half the time. She's hawking, she's hawking, she's coughing, she's sneezing, she's farting. It's terrible. Maybe this will help her. A little bit.
And she's snoring. Right? Oh, and she's... I'm assuming that she's also a snorer.
I'm a snorer. I don't know if she's a snorer. Dear wife Miriam Libby, are you a snorer?
Hello, Sally.
Thank you, Mom.
Hello, Doctor. Hannah.
Hello.
I've never been... the dear Rebbe has never left me out in public before.
Well, there's reasons for it.
So I had to leave the 21 and a half children home, and I'm here on the radio
welcome.
Show.
Well, she's so fecund and fertile and desirable that I'm afraid to bring her out into the world without her little shmata on her head. She's kind of like Towel, Blanket, the Michael Jackson child. I'm afraid the world will see her and take her from me. But she's with us here in the studio. Miriam Libby, you're looking beautiful.
Thank you, Solly.
Are you pregnant at the moment?
Not that I know of, but I didn't check in the last 2 seconds, so we don't know.
Yeah, maybe Baruch in the last Hashem, hour it could have happened. Bezras Hashem, maybe it'll be our 22 and a half child. Maybe. That would be lovely.
You only claim 21 and a half of them.
So let me ask you, Miriam, what are your sinus issues?
Ever since the 16th child... I have a very painful sinus. I cough. I snore. I can't breathe. Those are my symptoms.
Especially the not breathing.
And I said it's hard to kiss when you cannot breathe through your nose. It's impossible to kiss.
Well, the rabbi is very furry, so it's an obstacle no matter what.
Yes, and we do a lot of soul kissing. So I don't even know what the hell that
I don't
means.
Know why you are like this. I think, Doctor, if the rabbi cleaned his nose, he would not be so angry and hostile.
I should be cleaning my brain. That's what I should be doing. Anywho, so Miriam Libby, Dr. Hannah has been kind enough to...
Hold my bowl. Please,
I beg your pardon?
Please hold my bowl, honey.
I'm going to hold her bowl. What we're going to do is Rabbi Hannah, we're actually going to have Miriam...
Dr. Hannah,
doctor,
you're
me.
The Rebbe.
I'm the Rebbe. She's the doctor. He's the DJ. I'm the rapper. It's all good. Now, Dr. Hannah, would you kindly talk us through Miriam Libby actually using your product live on... She just dropped the bottle. Maybe you should make a more ergonomic bottle, perhaps. That would be your next argument.
Listen, honey, thank God that the bottle was closable, or we would have had a mess.
This is right. Yes. Salty water.
And a plastic, but a safe plastic, a BPA-free plastic.
Ooh.
That, by the way, is manufactured in the United States, Kansas City.
Huh. Very
and the whole kit is assembled by disabled adults, which I'm very proud of. Okay, so...
I'd like to make in that factory.
Libby,
oh, commuting time! Oh, boy, hey!
Solly!
So,
let the doctor
all right,
speak.
I'm sorry. Okay, Dr. Hannah,
no, it's
take
okay.
it away. Go ahead,
so
Dr.
So, Miriam Libby probably washed the bottle, as the instructions say, and then she added...
I have the solution prepared, doctor.
Oh, good. Okay. So, now she's going to hold the bottle... up to her nose, and she's going to insert the tip of the bottle all the way in the nostril to make a complete seal.
I got it.
And you got it?
I got it.
And now she has the bottle in the right position.
She looks like a Ubangi at the moment.
I got it.
Do not bend. You're straight up.
Uh-huh.
You're looking straight ahead.
Uh-huh.
Because she's in the radio station and not in the shower, she has a bowl under her.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, she'd be doing it in the shower or over the sink. So she's in position, tip in the nostril, and now she's going to take a breath and hold her breath as she gently squeezes about 1 ounce of solution along one nasal floor, makes a U-turn, and exits the opposite nostril.
It's working! It's happening! It's doing it! It's doing it! Oh, wait, don't cough, you okay?
I got too excited with the rabbi, doctor.
Oh, I'm sorry. Do I need to leave?
When you mentioned doing it in the shower, that kind of got us spoke there.
I need to do the other nostril. I only did one side, darling. Hold on, darling.
She's pushing the thing into the other nostril as we speak. It's going into... okay, there we go. Very good. Now the water's dripping.
And I bet a bunch of junk came out. And now you're going to gently exhale through the nostrils without blocking one nostril. So, i.e., you're blowing your nose, but don't block one nostril when you blow. So
the,
and now, if Miriam Libby has done all that, she may be able to take such a deep breath with her mouth closed and her nostrils open, it will sound like this. Can you hear it? There's no sound because the nose is clear.
But does it feel clear, Miriam Libby?
It does, but darling, I never realized you stunk. Did you ever hear of the mikvah, darling?
Damn it.
I feel like a new woman.
This is what, now I have to start bathing. Damn it.
Woo.
Oh, no.
So Miriam Libby now is able to even smell you in addition to breathing.
But now, doctor, I think I want to get, and I want a better rabbi who doesn't have a temple and a broom closet.
Oh, you know, sometimes you should be happy the way things are. What can I tell you? Oh, but she's looking good. How did that feel while you were spritzing the thing in the nose? And
Darling, it makes me feel like I'm a girl again. I can breathe. I feel my concentration is better.
Oh, my goodness.
I feel like I can get oxygen into my body. And I think
now you can run around and chase the children, all 21 and a half.
I think I'm going to leave my husband, the beloved, well, not beloved, Rabbi Saul, with the 21 and a half children, and I'm going to move to Boca.
Oh, my gosh. All because of this nose wash? Uh-oh, I better take it away from you then.
I have a new meaning in life.
Oh, wonderful.
Because my business is not to break up marriages.
Well, good luck, doctor. Look what you've done to us.
No.
It's so good. I could walk around in my own stink. She didn't care.
Sally, no, Sally, your stink is odoriferously lovely. I love you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, darling. That's
And actually, what's very interesting is what Miriam Libby is talking about is pheromones. And those are you can't really appreciate what they... You can't smell them, but... Those are the things that attract one species to another. You know, that's the thing that attracts you to your spouse. Or that's how animals are able to connect with other animals. That's why, and the list is humongous. They're called pheromones, and they're very important to our existence. Being able to smell is incredibly important. Can you imagine... I had a customer, a patient, who couldn't smell. So he would go and eat. He would open. He didn't read the container in the refrigerator, and he every morning would go and eat a whole container of sour cream, plain. And finally the wife said, "What are you doing?" He said, "I'm just eating my yogurt." He thought it was yogurt because he couldn't taste.
Wow.
He couldn't taste. And then when he started washing his nose, the taste returned.
And then he realized he hated sour cream. And then he was vomiting for 3 weeks.
And no wonder his cholesterol went sky high.
Oh, because he was eating, of course. Of course. Oh, my God.
Yeah,
yes?
Because he was eating the sour cream that had lots of fat in it.
I got to tell you, you know, there's the joke about, you know, my dog... has no nose. How does he smell? Terrible. That's old joke. Yeah,
that's Dr. Hanna,
let me ask you a little, moving away from the nostrilsality that we have been going through for a thing. Here's something that I do wonder, because you're very much about keeping clean and the sinuses clean and washing and all that and cleansing, but I also wonder about the other side. Is our society purelling itself out of existence? Are we so making sure that the kid washes their hands every 10 seconds with an antibiotic thing, with a whatever?
Great question. Great question.
Thank you,
I love it. You know, it's a very complicated thing. On the one hand, if we were all living 300 years ago on the farm and growing our own food and not breathing in the exhaust of the big cities, and we weren't eating foods that had all sorts of garbage in it, preservatives and colors and all this, we wouldn't need to wash our nose very often. But because we live in such a tainted world, it's important to wash our nose. But to your point about are we having children sterilize themselves, it's very interesting. There's a recent study that supports that children who are not as sterile, children who grow up on farms that are exposed to mud and dirt and all that, they're actually healthier. They're actually healthier and less allergic than the children that are raised in almost sterile environments. So there's a balance. There's a difference between sterility in terms of what's natural, and that's good, versus living in the South Bronx, where the air is really uninhabitable for humans, and no wonder asthma is sky high in that area. So that's a different issue because of all the chemicals and the roach feces and the everything else that contributes to being hypersensitive, which is another word for allergies.
Actually, you know, to take a serious tack, speaking of people, pardon me, people being sterilized, let's talk about the Holocaust for just a moment. I know I'm changing gears. I know, but is it your parents or your grandparents were?
Well, both my parents and grandparents. My parents were teenagers, but they were with their parents during the Holocaust, but yes.
So how did they get out?
Well, because my Sakta, my grandma, my Bubby, she really led the husband, my grandpa, and the four children at every turn. Like, for example, when they were living in Poland and they had a roundup of the community, my grandma had a instinct to not go and leave that night and go in the opposite direction, and they headed toward Russia. And then there was another event where they were living somewhere, and if they would have followed the community directions, they wouldn't be here today. Well, they're not here, but you know what I mean. They wouldn't have survived. So I have to say that my Sapta did not listen to the rules, did not listen to the authorities, and kept sneaking away at the right time each time. So basically they spent most of the war in Siberia begging for potatoes from a farmer, trying to survive. And then they came back to Germany and lived in a displaced persons camp for months, I don't know. And then we immigrated to the United States, but my Sapta and Saba, my grandma and grandpa, went to Israel.
Oh, my God. Well, how old were your parents when they were
They were teenagers during the war, and I was born in 51. And, you know, they were 20, something like that.
So they were already out of the relocation camps when you were born, though. They were in America somewhere.
Yes.
They settled. How did they get into America?
Well, if you were Jewish and in Europe after the war, there was an American organization that would give you the choice of, would you like to go to Israel? We'll buy you tickets to go to Israel. Or do you want to go to America? I have many family members who chose Canada. I have some family members that chose Costa Rica.
Okay, those were the
Polacks. And I have some family members that went to Argentina.
Oh, my God. Well, they found more Nazis there. Go figure.
That's right. That's right. So, we survived because we were super lucky. And my dad's story, he was also a teenager, has another whole story of how he survived in the woods. And he actually got into a hustle or a fight with an SS soldier.
Oof.
And he killed the soldier and took his gun. And I have that 39 SS Luger gun that was issued to the Nazis.
Oh, my God. That's you know, have it registered? Or I hope no police officer is listening and think you, I mean, it's all legal, isn't it?
It's a relic. Honey.
It's a relic. I know that.
Yeah, but I think I don't know. You know, it's a family heirloom. So to be honest, I don't think I've ever registered it.
Huh. Well, you know, don't make trouble. And, you know, I won't tell anybody if you are. And nobody's listening, so it's
will you
fine.
Get me? Will you get me out of jail if I get arrested?
I will. If you bailed out my wife's nose and made her smell again, and she smells beautiful, by the way, I will do that for you. I will bail you out of jail and hopefully hide the Luger. Or is it a Ruger or a Luger?
It's a Luger.
It's a
L-U-G-A-R.
From the woman who looks like boogers, come to think of it. There you go. We have been talking with Rabbi Hannah Solomon.
She's not a rabbi. You're the rabbi. She's the doctor.
So I'm so used to saying Rabbi Solomon.
She's the doctor. She went to medical school.
Where did you go to medical school, by the way?
When I was...
Where?
I started... University of Missouri.
Missouri. Okay.
Yeah, that was after I left the spiritual commune. I was a hippie for 4 years.
That sort of now is tying everything together. Now, when was that? Was it in the 60s or early 70s?
Early 70s. I lived on the largest spiritual commune in the country called The Farm. We grew soybeans, and we actually introduced firm tofu, and that was back in the day when I'd grow the soybean, and I'd grind the soybean, and I'd make soy milk and soy ice cream, and... I woke up one day and thought, you know what? I was 27, two kids, little kids, and I thought, I cannot change the world growing green beans. I have to do something. I think I'll go to med school. So I didn't have any college. So I finished my 4 years of college in 3 years and started medical school 3 years to the day after leaving the farm.
Wow. Well, I mean, every little aspect of your life, you know, I ask a question and they say, oh, this happened. And then, oh, my God, you did that. And then, oh, yeah, right, so you did, oh, you did that. It's amazing when I'm talking to you. I'm like, anything, spectacular. What?
Well, I was going to say, so now so my grandma and grandpa came from Israel and then lived down the street from me in Brooklyn in the ghetto. And I spoke Yiddish to them. And they always avoided doctors unless you were near death. And so I always had this natural teachings from my family. And then the hippie-ness, the natural approach, was a natural evolution. So when I went to medical school and they taught me about all the drugs and the surgeries, those are miracles. They're wonderful blessings when we really need them. But then when I started practice, it was very clear to me that Western medicine is actually causing more harm in some situations. It's all a full circle.
Is the medical community now finally accepting an approach? I'm going to say a holistic approach, but an approach that does include a mix of actual real medicines and chemicals, plus holistic, the berries and the nuts and the extracts
right,
and plants and acupuncture and massage and whatever other kinds of healing? Or are they still incredibly reticent at accepting anything that isn't made by Bayer or Johnson & Johnson or those places?
Pfizer. So, Rabbi,
yes.
I would answer that about 10 years ago, with the internet and people educating themselves. Oh, I have a sore knee. So they would Google it. They'd come equipped with some information and go to the doctor and say, well, what about this? Can I use this? And initially the doctors would say, oh, we don't have any studies on using that herb, or we don't really know. So no, use this Celebrex. It may give you a heart attack, but it'll help your knee issue. With time, so many more people are forcing Western medicine doctors to consider grapefruit seed extract or lavender or whatever herb, oil, massage, acupuncture, Chinese medicine. Over time, I'm glad to report that, when I went to med school, there were no departments of integrative medicine in any medical school, maybe one in the country. Now, thank God, about 30% of medical schools have integrated departments, i.e. teaching the medical students today that there are other approaches. You know, why wouldn't we, as a civilized society, consider some of the Chinese herbs that have had thousands of years of clinical experiences that work? Why wouldn't we use those? Why would instead do we use this new drug that may take care of the knee pain, but 30% of people will die from a heart attack because of it?
Well,
how does that make sense?
Well, the Chinese herbs, let's be honest, you know, they heal you, but an hour later you're sick again. So I don't know what
not,
that means.
Not all of them. It just depends. And that's where I hope we begin to objectively look at all of these different treatments. Acupuncture has a wonderful place. Massage has a wonderful place.
Mm-hmm.
Cleaning up your diet has a wonderful place. But drugging and surgerizing should be left for the last resort, not the first step.
I utterly and absolutely agree. In fact, I wouldn't say I'm addicted to, but oil of gefilte, a little bit of gefilte oil. Gets my day started. Oh, dear Miriam Libby, yes?
That explains the smell, darling.
That would explain.
You smell a little gefilte.
How's your nose, dear Miriam Libby? Are you feeling good? You're smelling like
I'm
a rose?
I'm smelling your gefilte smell very strongly. I feel like it's Passover.
Oh, I think we're going to make number 22 and a half today. I can feel it. I can feel it. Anyway, Dr. Hannah Solomon, it has been a marvelous time and an educational time talking with you so sensibly about the things that you do. But let us also make sure that people know how to investigate, get your book, by the way. It's called Clearing the Air, One Nose at a Time. Then it's available. Please tell how to get the whole nasopure system and your book. How do people do this?
It's very complicated. You go to nasopure.com. NASO. Like in Paul, URE.com, or they can call me directly, 877-853-7873. I'm happy to talk noses, ears, throats, breathing with anybody at any time.
Anuses, or you don't go there?
I could go there, too, because that's part of the whole Megillah.
It is. It really is. So if you have a nose or a throat or an anus problem, please call Dr. I'm sorry, Miriam.
Sally.
What is that number again? Please say it again twice slowly.
877-853-7873.
One more time.
877-853-7873.
And the website again?
Nasopure. NASOP, like in Paul, URE.com.
Dr. Hannah Solomon, it has been a delight. You've been also a very, very good sport. I'm going to, when I get on, I can start playing some music. I'm going to do my own nose, which, considering the size of my Jewish nose, could take, you know, a whole... I should play Inna Gaga David. I'll still be working on it while I'm doing it. But it's been a joy, and I wish you much luck with your practice and with your book and with your nasality and your nasal cleansing ideas. I think it's just been wonderful.
Rabbi, thank you for having me. Shabbat shalom. Miriam Libby, I'm so excited that you can now breathe. And I will talk to you later. Enjoy the day.
Emir Tzah Hashem, you too. So great. Good Shabbos to you. Bye-bye
now. Good Shabbos. Bye-bye.